This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from Oakland. The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me. If you'd like to donate to support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways, it's the sound of young America.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. This week on the program, comedian John Mulaney. Before we get to the interview, here's a selection from his brand new CD called The Top Part.
I've lived in New York City now for a few years, and I have a new phenomenon in my life where late at night on the street, women will see me as a threat. That is funny, yeah. That is silly. It's weird, too, because, like, I'm still afraid of being kidnapped. But I'll give you the best example of this. A couple of months ago, I was at a subway station at 2 o'clock in the morning, all right? And I'm changing between trains, 2 o'clock in the morning, and at this subway station, you have to, like, walk down this long hallway in order to change trains. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning, it's just me and this woman. And we're walking down the hallway. She's walking a few yards ahead of me. But she keeps giving me, like, the over-the-shoulder. Like that, you know? And then she starts to pick up the pace. Like, she starts to walk a lot faster. So I think, oh, she must hear the train coming. Or maybe she feels it in her feet, like a Native American in a movie. So I start to sprint down the hallway at her, and she looks back and she's like, ah! And then she gives chase, so now we're booking it down the corridor at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm gaining on her. I'm gaining on her, and we're getting to the end of the hallway, and she starts to go into that, like, dead end shuffle, you know, that women do when you chase them, and I'm almost there. I'm almost at her, and then it dawns on me. Oh, she's running from me.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest on the program is comedian and writer John Mulaney. His brand new comedy CD, which is called The Top Part, has just been released by Comedy Central Records, and it's no coincidence that his first Comedy Central Presents special airs April 3rd at 10 p.m., and if you're hearing this after April 3rd, probably ad nauseum for the next 10 years on Comedy Central. John, welcome to The Sound of Young America.
Oh, thank you, Jesse. Thank you for having
me. It's great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have someone on The Sound of Young America younger than myself.
Only by a year, though, right?
Yeah, you're 26.
I'm 26 and you're
27, almost 28. Should we fight?
Huh?
I think we should fight.
Should we break a broomstick in half and just go at it?
Just go to town.
That'd be great.
Break a broomstick on our knee, Bo Jackson style.
Yeah, I could never fight you, though, because you are a fellow sufferer of babyface old radio voice.
Yeah.
Which we're both afflicted with.
I read in a past interview that you did that you grew up with a very interesting combination of comedy in your world. It comprised both of the sort of contemporary comedy of the late 1980s, early 1990s, the Wayne's Worlds and so on, and of a sort of secondary stream of like Bob and Ray records that you used to get to sleep as a kid.
Oh, yeah. Cassettes. I had a lot of old radio shows in boxes under my bed, tapes that my dad would get me. He'd get those catalogs that...
Oh, sure. Wireless catalog?
Yeah. I guess they don't come through PBS. I think he got signed up for them because we would buy PBS box sets. cassettes. And I would listen to like the Jack Benny Show and Fibber McGee and Molly and Burns and Allen and Bob and Ray.
And we should be clear that when you say Fibber McGee and Molly, you mean that you actually listen to Fibber McGee and Molly. You're not just saying the old time radio show with the funniest name.
No. I actually listen to their show. Is that the one with the funniest name? Yeah, I guess so.
It really is. Fibber McGee
Duffy's
and Molly.
Duffy's Tavern is kind of a funny name, too. That's a show, I believe.
It's funnier. That's funnier in the context of an old-time radio show. I mean, I think there's...
No, there, yeah. How did? How
it
can
would be
I
tough
pretend?
To find a context where Fibber McGee and Molly isn't funny.
I agree. And they had that closet full of stuff that every time they opened would all fall out.
Yeah, Fibber McGee and Molly is a funny memorial service.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I'm going to a memorial service for Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, because they died together?
Yeah, I guess
so.
Oh,
they were in the same car.
I can only presume so.
Or they were both killed by all the stuff in the closet. I'm going to stop now making Fibber McGee and Molly references.
What was
directly.
Because they mean nothing?
I don't think they're...
Except to our public radio audience.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
What was your favorite?
Bob and Ray became my favorite.
What was your favorite before Bob and Ray? Because Bob and Ray is the classy, smart comedy nerd answer to that question.
Okay, fair. It wasn't at the time. It was just this thing that I listened to when I was 11 and my older brother and sister made fun of me for. But Jack Benny was my favorite before that. That and You Bet Your Life, the radio incarnation of You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. And the TV was also with Groucho Marx. But
when did Bob and Ray start to make an impression?
I got... 4 sets of 4 tapes each of Bob and Ray. So I had 16 cassettes of Bob and Ray. I got them for Christmas when I was about 12. And I started listening to them and at first didn't quite get it. I don't know why. And then gradually I would just like, you know, I would fall asleep with my Walkman on most nights listening to some old radio show because I was just bad at falling asleep. I was very afraid of burglars and kidnappers and murderers who would come in your house and chop you up and murder you.
Mummies?
Mummies? No, nothing supernatural. That was the problem. So it couldn't be debunked by my parents. If you were afraid of monsters, your dad can tell you monsters don't exist. But I would say, I'm afraid someone's going to break in and, you know, put a gun to your head, Dad, and then, you know, you'll have to, like, lead him up to our rooms and he'll kill us all and stuff. And since that is technically possible, there wasn't much he could say other than like, well, we have an alarm. So.
One time a junkie broke into my house, threatened my mom with a knife, but I was mostly scared of mummies.
Really?
Primarily mummies. I mean, burglars occurred to me, but primarily mummies.
You weren't afraid of junkies after that?
Well, I was afraid of junkies in the sense that junkies are pretty scary, mm-hmm. although they're not that much more scary than winos, to be honest with you. There's something really disconcerting about a wino when you're little.
Yeah, I don't want to do the work now, but we could do a mummies versus junkies bit. We'll pound it out later.
Okay,
we'll
great.
And there's got to be some grist there.
We'll punch it in later and pretend like we thought of it in the moment.
Yeah,
We'll write out a few gags.
I've been trying to follow the news more this year. I've been trying to be much more involved with the news. You know, I read that this week, over 2 days, the Dow Jones dropped 929 points. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is to not know what that means. It's getting embarrassing when there's too much financial news. It gets real embarrassing. At this point, like, when I'm watching CNBC, I almost feel like I'm a kid again, and I'm like, listening to my parents talk about me in front of me. And I don't know what the f*** they're saying, but I know that it's gonna affect me. You know, they're like, I think someone needs to go to BED, and I'm like, I don't know what this BED shit is. I just know I'm going to get screwed.
Was there a point when you realized that jokes were something you could make in addition to something you could appreciate?
Yeah, I tried to be funny since I was about, you know, 3 or 4. I don't know if it was jokes. It was, you know, yelling and... running around.
Sure. I mean, a 4-year-old's idea of funny is mostly nonsense.
I had a joke when I was 4 that I still like. I was at a birthday party when I was 4 years old. This girl, Liz, from my preschool, And her mom saw the shirt I was wearing and said, "That's one sharp shirt you have on." And I said, "Yeah, sometimes I use it instead of scissors," and then walked out of the room. I knew that was an outline.
You happened to be carrying a microphone. You just threw it on the ground.
Well, it was an ice cream cone, and I threw it to the ground. Isn't that adorable?
Were you actually in a child sketch comedy group?
Yes, yeah, I was in a sketch comedy group when I was 7 years old called the Rugrats. This was before that Nickelodeon cartoon, the Rugrats. We didn't take our name from them. Don't accuse us of that. And it was run out of like a black box theater in Chicago. And I should ask my mom who first told her about it, but someone said to her, like, "Hey, your kid is weird and loud and annoying. Maybe he'd like to do this." And she signed me up for it. And what we would do is just like improv games and different things for probably 2 weeks. In my head, it felt like 6 months, but it was probably like 2 weeks of, you know, twice a week doing these different like kind of improv short form exercises and stuff. And out of that, we built like a review of sketches.
Do you remember what any of the sketches were?
I do remember doing, just doing Dana Carvey's George Bush impression, almost verbatim.
And it's still pretty good for a seven-year-old.
Yeah, I wonder, I have no idea how it sounded. It sounded pitch perfect in my head. But I think I just regurgitated the words that I would hear Dana Carvey do, and, That was one standalone piece in the show.
Sure.
To give you an idea. We did one sketch, I remember, about the boys were the secretaries and the women were the girls were the bosses. And you know, we flipped the gender script and we wowed the audience.
It's a powerful political statement.
Yeah, it was. It really was. We had a director who was this very nice woman who told me she was in the movie Bright Lights, Big City. And so I asked my mom to rent Bright Lights, Big City. And I looked for her and she wasn't in it. But I never never mentioned it to her.
It's the Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org. And I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the young stand-up comic John Mulaney, who's taking the world by storm with a new Comedy Central special and a brand new CD called The Top Part.
I love reading crime news in general. I like the local paper in a city because they always have good crime coverage. And it's funny to me when the local paper will try and make someone sound prettier after they're murdered. Like, you'll walk by the newsstand and you'll see the headline like, "Beauty Slain." And then you look at the photo and you're like, "How about body found?"
You went to college at Georgetown University, home of the Georgetown Hoyas.
Home of the Hoyas.
This is the segment on college mascots.
On the hoops.
That I do on every show. Georgetown, for folks right around your age, became somehow a comedy hotbed. There are a number of two past Sound of Young America guests, Jim Gaffigan and Mike Birbiglia, each of whom is just a little bit older than you.
Yep.
Your writing partner and partner in crime, often the very funny comedian and actor Nick Kroll.
Yep.
Also a Georgetown student. How did you get involved in doing comedy there?
Well, I started at Georgetown, let's see, in 2000. And as a freshman in the first couple weeks, I auditioned for the Georgetown improv group. And the director, who was a senior, was Nick Kroll. So he cast me in the improv group. And we would do, multiple shows a year and different improv fests and stuff. And Mike Birbiglia, actually, had just graduated before I got there. And along with some other alumni, they formed this group called Little Man in New York that would perform at the UCB Theater there. So we were both performing at Georgetown, Nick and I, and others like Jacqueline Novak, who's a hilarious comic in New York. We were all performing together and then, you know, had this link to some performers at the UCB Theater and in New York at large. So we could kind of, you know, do our thing at school and also saw you know, oh, that's how you do it when you get out of college.
The Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in 2001 was a pretty new institution. It's now sort of a standby of the alternative comedy world. Was it sort of a mecca for you at the time? Was it something that you looked to and realized, like, oh, this is something I can actually seriously do?
Oh, yeah. We went to, when we were when I was a freshman, Kroll organized a trip to New York where we went up and, like, did some, like, workshops with UCB, with Armando Diaz and a couple other UCB teachers, and we went to see ASCAT that Sunday night. And I think it was, let's see, Ian Roberts, Horatio Sanz, Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, maybe Mantzoukas. I'm trying to remember who all was playing, and Tina Fey was doing monologues. And that was in the old theater when, if you sat in the front row, you were basically on the stage. And that was just, that was amazing. So yeah, so it was early on in college that I saw, oh, there's stuff going on there that you can go and sign up for and then do, hopefully. And then at the same time, you know, getting to know Birbiglia, who is an alumni who'd been in the improv group, I saw, you know, oh, you can also go and actually be a stand-up comic. You can actually go and do it at open mics and around town, because, you know, different rooms were opening then too.
I've never understood being goth, you know? I could never do that. I could never dress goth. And don't get me wrong, I'm unhappy. It's not that. It's just that if you're a goth person, every single day you have to put on, like, new makeup and nail polish and Satan stars. Like, I bet you part of the reason goths are so miserable is they wake up every morning and think, oh, God, I gotta put all that back on. Why did I join?
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is comedian John Mulaney. His first CD is called The Top Part. We'll have more in just a minute when we come back.
Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
Are you an artist or designer? Try your luck at the second annual Maximum Fun Drive T-shirt contest. Every year for our annual pledge drive, it's coming up in May, by the way, we create a limited edition Maximum Fun shirt for donors, and every year that shirt is designed by a listener just like you. Here's how it works. Create a design on any color American Apparel T-shirt and send a web-friendly image file to our intern, brian@MaximumFun.org. Between now and Tax Day, April 15th, Brian will be posting designs in a special thread on our forum. He'll choose 10 semifinalists, and forum members will vote to determine our 5 finalists. Then a blue ribbon super panel of T-shirt experts will vote on the finalists and choose our winner, which will be produced for our hundreds of Maximum Fun donors. Besides the satisfaction of knowing that he or she has made the world a better place, all the finalists and the eventual winner will get prizes from MaximumFun.org. The overall winner will even get $100 cash American in the bank. You have until April 15th. Ladies and gentlemen, start your drafting pads. Welcome back to The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is comedian John Mulaney. You open your new CD, which is your first CD, with a bit about drinking to the point of blackout
every day. Yeah. Every night.
Every night.
Come on, Jesse.
Sorry,
Drinking in the day.
I'll tell you about blacking out. It was always weird when I would go out for the night with, like, some money and black out and wake up with no money. It was even weirder, though, when I would go out for the night with some money, black out, and wake up with more money. Because that means that I earned money. That means that I traded goods and or services.
That's kind of a gutsy thing to hit a crowd with right off the top, especially if you're not, you know, maybe it's one thing if you're, I don't know, who'd be like a Dave Attell, somebody in their 40s who's kind of grizzled, and that's part of their comic persona. You have the aforementioned baby face. You're a 26-year-old man.
Man, wow.
What led you You're a 26-year-old lad. What led you to make that an opener? Like, what kind of reactions do you get?
Here's the thing. I never thought it was very gutsy. I started talking about drinking and blacking out after I quit drinking. The first time I talked about it was at a club in Cincinnati called Go Bananas. This was probably like 2005, December. And some of those stories or anecdotes about blacking out got a laugh. So I kept doing them. So to me, it wasn't gutsy at all.
Comedy is a job that takes place at night. It's a job where, you know, if you're drinking a lot every night and you're an insurance salesman, if you can pull yourself out of the bed the next day with a black coffee and a couple of raw eggs or whatever you've chosen.
What year do
you know what I mean? But yeah, in my world, all drinkers are insurance salesmen whose cure to it is black coffee and raw eggs.
You left out the Alka-Seltzer. This is too loud. That's how hungover they are, is that the Alka-Seltzer fizz is too loud. What were you saying about insurance salesmen in 1939?
I was saying, you know, and then they can start drinking at happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
If you're drinking so heavily that you're blacking out, you're drinking during your work hours if you're a comic.
Yeah, I was doing comedy when I still drank, but not as much. I mean, you know, and in fact, I stopped about a year after college and then started doing, because of the newfound productivity, lots more comedy. Those periods didn't overlap is what I mean.
I'm a big movie fan. I'm very, very confused why so many people love the movie Scarface, though. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It is, but that's not my point. It's just that, like, I've seen tons of people in the past couple years who wear, like, knee-long Scarface t-shirts, like it's a flag or something. Like the guy from the movie Scarface is their hero. I wonder if they've seen the end of the movie, because it ends really, really badly. Spoiler alert, Scarface dies snorting a comical pile of cocaine in a tacky-ass mansion that looks like if, like, the Golden Girls won the lottery. If they won the Powerball lottery. Also, I don't like people lumping in Scarface with better movies. I have friends that'll be like, yeah, I like movies like The Godfather and Scarface. Oh, yeah? Well, my favorite foods are lobster and Skittles. Those are equal in my eyes.
My guest John Mulaney is a stand-up comic who just recorded his first CD, The Top Part. You got a job writing for Saturday Night Live.
Yes, I did.
Which is sort of a classic first job for a junior comedy genius, such as yourself.
That's very sweet of you. That would be a good, like, series of paperback Nancy Drew-like books. The Junior Comedy Geniuses. We solve mysteries.
Maybe they live in an abandoned diner.
Maybe we live in a tree.
Yeah,
like
sure.
A hollowed out tree.
How about a tree in an abandoned diner? Because that's how
You're
abandoned
right.
the diner is.
I'll go with diner. Yeah, oh yeah, it's so abandoned that a tree started growing through the floor and we live
yeah.
in it. And we go to sets and then we solve crimes.
Yeah, sure. Do you think this is possible? Do you think the crimes go down in the clubs themselves?
Maybe we track down joke thieves.
And
what if we track down joke thieves?
Oh my goodness. Each book takes place in a different city.
Yeah.
Oh, this week we're at the Punchline in San Francisco. Next week, we're on the road. We're headed to Rooster Tea Feathers in Sunnyvale. Then we're Go Bananas in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and then we're going to Charlie Goodnight's in North Carolina.
Yeah, and mostly the comedy clubs that they perform in are the ones with the dumbest names.
Yeah, well, that keeps the reader interested. You know, the names have to pop and have a little texture to it.
Were you intimidated when you first started at Saturday Night Live?
I was very intimidated. I am an anxious person. I started there this August. I was really, 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 really excited to start. It was the job I'd wanted to have since I was about 7 years old, and I was really intimidated. And then I got there, and I have to say, the people there were incredibly welcoming and incredibly friendly. And if it has a stigma for not being that, that is not my experience at all.
Did you have a first great triumph on the show?
I was fortunate enough to get a sketch in my first show. That was pretty great, and I also...
What was the sketch?
It was on the Michael Phelps episode. It was this sketch. It was sort of a continuation of these T-Mobile ads that were out that month.
So, did your kids pick who's going to be in your five yet?
I picked Stacy, Beth, Ashley, Rachel, and Jenny.
That's funny. I also picked Stacy, Beth, Ashley, Rachel, and Jenny. Your friends are hot.
Mom, Dad, are you going to do anything?
Well, maybe you shouldn't have such hot friends.
Who's in your five? Introducing My Faves for Families.
I'm sorry. What did you just say? You think her friends are hot?
No, I mean, you know, come on. They're attractive young women.
Oh, you're attracted to them?
I didn't say that I was attracted to them. I said that they were attractive.
Michael, these are 15-year-old girls.
What are you implying?
Each person gets an unlimited number of calls to any five people. That's right. All the calls you want to make.
Jeez, Amanda, it's like you think I'm some kind of sicko.
What am I supposed to think, huh? Like you say you think girls our daughter's age are sexy?
What would you know about sexy? Huh? I mean, you've been so cold to me, so cold to my touch for so long.
That goes for any number, even landlines.
Do writing for sketch and writing for stand-up exercise different muscles for you, or is it different sides of the same coin?
That's a good question. I guess more different sides of the same coin. I mean, you know, sketches need to have hard jokes like stand-up, so it more comes down to, you know, you can write a great joke, but it doesn't make sense for a character. You write a great joke for yourself as a stand-up, unless you have a really, really defined character on stage, which I don't, you know. Like, unless you're like a Stephen Wright and you say, well, that's just not my kind of joke. Or other comics who have a really well-defined character. You can use it. In sketch, I've found in my limited experience that, you know, you'll come up against the reality that this character wouldn't say such and such joke.
Can you think of a joke that you thought of just in passing, maybe recently, and found yourself sort of noting it in your mental or physical notebook under either the column stand up or sketch?
You know, since I started, and I found this like working on important things with Dimitri Martin, when I was working on those, just most ideas start to go towards the show for better normally. I mean, it's good to just kind of throw your all at those things. So there have been a couple things that I've thought, well, that's just a stand-up joke for me to say. But, you know, if I have something topical that I think of, there's, you know, submitting it to update. If there's some kind of strange joke that would work as a sketch, I'll try and get that written as a sketch. So most things, honestly, fall into the column of, oh, I should maybe work on this for the show. But I try and reserve some things for stand-up still, yeah.
Do you feel like you're on your way to figuring out who you are as a stand-up, to defining yourself as more than just jokes?
I think so. I hope so. You know, I don't have, I haven't had yet a ton of life experiences. So it's kind of hard to say what sort of material I'll be doing in a few years. I don't know, you know, and that will certainly help sort of figure out what kind of persona I have on stage. I mean, I would hope it would just be as close to my real personality as it could be. Not that I figured out my real personality either.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to be
on
the show.
Oh, thank you for having
America.
Me. This is a real thrill to be here.
It was great to have you. Comedian John Mulaney's brand new CD is called The Top Part. His Comedy Central Presents half-hour special premieres April 3rd at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central. And, of course, like many of those specials, will be seen in reruns thereafter. John, thanks again.
Thank you, Jesse.
That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with help from myself. Interstitial music provided by Dan Wally. Our editor is Nick White. Intern Brian Fernandez. My dog, taking a nap in her little bed, is Coco the chocolate dog. You can always email me directly if you have thoughts about the show, Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. Or you can visit us online and tell us what you think on the forums. And if you're a designer or an artist, get those t-shirt designs in. Remember, the theme is Maximum Fun. 3 entries per person. Brian at MaximumFun.org. Email them over to him, and he'll get them posted on the forum for you. Thank you so much. I love you so much. And if you're not an artist or designer, now's a great time to start getting your donation fingers warmed up for next month's festivities. We'll see you next time right here on The Sound of Young America.
This message comes from The Run-Through with Vogue. Listen as designers, Vogue editors, and industry icons like Erykah Badu and Florence Pugh have in-depth conversations about fashion and culture. New episodes are released each Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beats. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.